from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is being made in the greater Boston area, where you might see some rather odd deliveries being made. Now, I say odd because we are not accustomed to seeing various forms of freight being delivered by a fleet of bicycles. That's essentially what's happening with Metro Pedal Power outside Boston, and maybe someday soon we won't think it sounds so odd. Their specialty is delivering fresh CSA produce directly to people's homes without using any gasoline. But they do a lot more than that. This is an urban movement that, in some ways, does replace trucks with cargo bicycles. They can carry 500 pounds of goods, parcels to food shipments, and more. Metro Pedal Power is trying to change the way we expect basic deliveries to happen. Now, could this model travel? It's about the environment, sure. It's about economic development and jobs. What happens in Rochester if that were to happen here? Tonight, the Little Theater will show a film about this effort and the woman behind it. Her name is Wednesday Jane, and the film, Power to the Pedals, shows tonight at 7 o'clock. It's part of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. But first, Wednesday Jane is right here on Connections. It's great to meet you and see you in person. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Congratulations on the company and everything that you've done with this. I can't wait to learn about how it all started and whether it can travel and what we're going to see tonight. The filmmaker behind it's Bob Nessen. He's here. Bob, nice to see you.
Thank you so much for having us.
And we're going to talk about your film as well. And Scott Wagner is here. He's the coordinator of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. And I'm sure various people in our listening audience might have seen you riding their bicycle past their cars.
Yes, I'm a,
at some point.
I'm one of a growing number of full-year, all-year-round bicycle commuters in Rochester. And I think that bicycles, what we're learning is that bicycles have a place in our transportation infrastructure along with other public transportation and along with automobiles, and that all three modes of transport and pedestrian walking transport all form equally viable means of transportation around the city.
Well, we have a lot to talk about this hour, and before I even get into the background from Wednesday's background, I want to make sure I did describe Metro Pedal Power correctly. It started in 2008, and today, what does Metro Pedal Power do, Wednesday?
We have a couple different arms of our business. As you mentioned, we do a lot of deliveries of local farm food to people's homes. We also distribute to restaurants, so we have a little bit of a food hub going on where farm trucks come in from outside the city, Pioneer Valley, and also in, from Vermont and from New Hampshire. And then we distribute the last mile, which cuts down on congestion in the urban areas. We also have a waste hauling side of the business. In 2010, we got a contract with the city of Cambridge, and we actually service the recycling bins in the public areas and the parks. So that's actually a significant part of our business right now. And we also have a smaller compostable waste hauling service as well.
Parcel service?
We do some parcels, yeah. I mean, that's actually a smaller part of our business, but we certainly have the capacity. Mostly we've focused on working with the local farmers because mm-hmm. we feel really aligned with the local food movement.
And when, again, you started in 2008, but when did this idea really spring up for you as a possibility?
Well, it was, probably a couple of years before that. I started my year-round bicycle commuting in the year 2001 or something like that. I had always relied on the bicycle as a means of transportation, but I really got into it then and then also got into learning this idea that you can actually carry things as well as yourself. You know, you can actually use the bicycle as a tool in a similar ways that you use cars for carrying things around. So once I learned that you can haul cargo, and for me at the beginning it was just hauling my groceries and I moved apartments actually with a bicycle trailer, and that was really empowering. So the idea was percolating for quite some time, and then some synergies happened around the time of 2007, 2008, and we were able to start this company.
You got to see this film just to see the way they haul stuff around. I mean, that's why I think at first and foremost, Bob Nessen, I love just seeing the visual of this. It feels like a little bit like looking at our future, a little bit of a greener way, a smarter way of doing things. What did you think?
That's what we're hoping. That what Wednesday is doing, both personally and with her business, really illustrates possibilities that many people don't think about and don't really believe are possible. The idea of hauling 500 pounds of whatever it is on a cargo trike, they're actually tricycles, would never occur to people. The idea that a bicycle is an established part of the transportation matrix is an important idea to process in the way that we can make cultural changes in our thinking to make much more of what Wednesday is doing possible for other areas of the country and of the world.
Well, you can see that story again tonight at the Little Theater at 7 o'clock. And Wednesday, you describe for our listeners what cargo hauling looks like. Again, he said it's a trike. Technically, it's a tricycle, but describe the visual.
Yeah, it's a trike. It has one single wheel in the front and two wheels in the back. And on the back axle is mounted a large cargo box. And they can haul up to 500 pounds of cargo. And in the box, most of them are red, and they have a hatch that opens, and we put all the cargo inside. It's about the cargo capacity of, maybe a Ford Transit, one of those sort of smaller delivery vans. That's pretty much what it looks like.
Yeah. It looks so cool. And 500 pounds you're pulling around. And again, as we said before the program started, I said to Wednesday, well, at least all of the roads in Cambridge are downhill or flat.
Right.
Pulling 500 pounds, you've got to be pretty fit.
Yeah, it definitely is a good workout. It's an excellent workout. And all of our riders are exceptionally fit. Fitness also is more interesting when it has a direct object, fit to do what exactly, and you're actually using your own strength to haul things around. It's an empowering thing.
So what is the whole entire mission of what you're doing? Some people may hear and they will assume it's environmental. Some will think jobs. Some will think that you're a bicycling enthusiast. It seemed like a logical extension of what you do. How do you describe the mission?
It's local self-reliance a lot. It's also, I think that's the primary driver for me is self-reliance. And, reducing dependency on foreign oil can solve a lot of problems, I think. And also bringing the means back to, a smaller scale, like where bicycle technology is actually very accessible. It's easy for people to understand, and it's very easy to learn. When you get into building and or maintaining, repairing a bicycle, it's more accessible than, building and maintaining an automobile.
How big of an operation do you have right now?
Our business, we have a fleet of 7 trikes. We have about 8 or 9 employees right now.
And when you decide, Bob, to tell a story like this, first of all, I want you to tell our listeners how you kind of got hooked up with this as a story to begin with.
Well, it all started 2008 or 10 or Wednesday. Started in a small shop in Cambridge, and I walked by. She was selling Dutch cargo bikes, and I thought, this is interesting, and I just stopped in and introduced myself, and I was with a friend who was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard, and when we walked out, we looked at each other and said, there's a story to be told. And that was the beginning of the development of a friendship and an understanding with Wednesday. And it occurred to me years later that we really need to do something because she provides a strong model for independence, self-reliance, as Wednesday said, and other big ideas that can help to change our culture.
By the way, I'm already seeing some questions online, and we're going to get to some of those. If you want to call the program with comments or questions about what Wednesday's doing or what you think would happen, what if Rochester adopted this kind of an enterprise? What if Scott Wagner quit work and did the exact same kind of thing in Rochester, which we're going to talk to Scott about in just a second there, your big smile. But we're going to talk about what it would mean to communities if we saw more of this. You can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Already Jill on Twitter wants to know, is this kind of thing common in Europe?
I think it is very common in Europe, yeah. I think it's much more common in Europe than it is in the United States, but that's changing. There's more and more people in the United States taking this kind of thing on.
I'm not surprised. I just think alternative or non-automobile transportation is much more common in Europe, generally speaking.
The United States really, you know, it has been in love with their cars, and so much of the infrastructure has been dedicated to automobiles and it was the backbone of so much industry for so long. But it's also that's something that's changing.
Bob? Go ahead, Scott.
One of the things that I would point out is that not only in Europe, but around the world, Africa, South Asia, East Asia, the bicycle or pedal powered transportation is an integral part of society. It's not unique. It's not special. It's something that's just the way business is done, just the way life is lived. You transport yourself on your bicycle. You carry freight on your bicycle. You'll see the photographs of people carrying 100 kilograms of potatoes on their bicycle. And, you know, yeah. It's really possible. It's something that really works. It's a simple vehicle that very efficiently transforms human muscle power into transportation.
And Bob?
Well, I agree with what Scott has said, but adding to that, after World War II, European countries were devastated by the bombs, and bicycles reestablished themselves as the principal means of getting around. And that kind of established a culture around bicycles, which today is profoundly common. And there are now foundational and government subsidies and support for bicycles, which you don't find very much in this country. And that infrastructure of regulatory and agencies and various kinds of support is something that we would like to see happen much more here. We're starting to catch up.
You're hearing the words of Bob Nessen, a filmmaker and educator, and Bob's film. You can see that tonight at the Little Theater about Wednesday Jane, the founder of Metro Pedal Power in the Boston area. She is here in studio and here in Rochester today. Scott Wagner is the coordinator of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. Tonight, 7 p.m., Scott, set the scene for us. What's coming up tonight?
Well, the film festival this year, the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center partnered with the Bicycle Film Festival, which is something that I started 3 years ago as just a way to get the bicycle community together. It's really gone far beyond what I ever imagined it would. And with the collaboration of the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center, we're able to do three films this year. Mm-hmm. So this first film of the series of three is really all about what we can accomplish as a community, how we can learn from something that someone else has done, someone in a neighboring city has done, and how we can transform that and see how that business model will work to empower our communities. So really excited to have Wednesday and Bob here with their film. We start this off with a short film segment made by a local filmmaker, Alex Freeman, about a local business called Our Community Bikes, which is a local, mostly volunteer organization that provides bicycle transportation to literally thousands of people in our city who would have no other personal means of transportation. They do this out of the goodness of their hearts for the most part. The people in the community have donated bicycles, which they fix up and provide to residents of our city who use them year-round as their personal means of transportation. So we'll learn a little bit about the Rochester perspective with this first film short, and then we'll transition to the Power to the Pedals film. After the film, we will have a community discussion with community leaders who are active in neighborhood empowerments and transportation advocacy, and Bob and Wednesday. And we'll talk about some of the issues that the film raises and some of the promises that the film raises and whether those are applicable here in Rochester and how we can do this, how we can learn from Bob and Wednesday and do this here in our community.
7 o'clock tonight at the Little Theater for the films, and then the discussion as well. But there's a lot of questions, I think, that our listeners will have, starting first and foremost with when you look at communities like Rochester. We've heard, even in the last 15 months that I've been hosting this program, I've heard many conversations about whether Rochester really is a bike-friendly, bicycle-friendly city. You know, are there enough bicycle lanes? Are bicyclists respected? Those kind of questions. And I know those are questions that sort of travel in every community. I want to get to that in a second. But also the issue of safety. Are bicyclists safe? And if you are hauling freight Wednesday, are you safe with 500 pounds of freight in the Boston area working the way you do?
Well, I would say that our riders are definitely safe. We actually put safety at the forefront of our rider training program that we've developed, and we take that very seriously. And I think that we actually started in Boston before a lot of the bike lanes and infrastructure were in place. They have done a great job, but I feel like they are following us, you know, that. And in every community, there needs to be pioneers who go out and just ride because they feel like it's the best thing to do. They love it. They enjoy it. They are passionate about it. And they pave the way, literally, for the rest of people to, you know, get out there and do it. And so safety is something that you really have to take on as your own personal responsibility. I mean, of course, you can't control what people in cars do, but there are methods to stay safe. And a lot of that comes with experience and really just awareness.
Well, and we're going to get Bob's comment on that in just a second. I want to make sure our listeners who are just joining us understand. Wednesday Jane, who you're hearing from right there, she's the founder of Metro Pedal Power in the Boston area, and she's here talking about her story, which is part of a film that you can see tonight. It is her company that is doing things that American, this is a big deal. This is sort of mind-blowing for a lot of Americans. As we've said, maybe not so much in Europe or other parts of the world, but we're talking about hauling up to 500 pounds of freight, bicycle hauling. You know, whether that is a food service delivery, CSA deliveries to houses, they do some parcels and things like that. But it is very interesting to see actual hauling, actual freight hauling via bicycle or technically tricycle, a fleet of tricycles. She's got 8 or 9 employees, full-time employees, part-time employees?
It's a mix.
It's a mix, okay. Yeah. And been doing it since 2008. Ever had any accidents or injuries or concerns because of the safety issue?
Most of the time, drivers, you know, our vehicles are very conspicuous, so they catch people's eyes.
They certainly do.
And so a lot of times drivers slow down because they're like, what is that? What is that person doing? You know.
Do people roll down the window and ask?
They sometimes do, yeah. We do get a lot of comments. Mostly positive. You know, I actually have much less problems on the cargo bikes than I do on my regular bicycle.
Oh, interesting.
Because people can tell that you're working. You're not just out there doing frivolous things. It's obviously not recreation. It's not a toy. This is work, real work that's happening. And, you know, it's and that's part of our mission as well, to show that bicycles are a tool to do real work that can actually, you know, move goods around the city in ways that are actually necessary for survival.
And what about local governments? How have they been with you?
Totally great. Yeah, I mean, they love what we're doing, and we have good relationships with them.
Have you had to tell them, we need more lanes, we need more understandings, whether it's sort of signage, et cetera?
No, like I said, you know, we go out there and do it because we feel like it's the right thing to do, and they follow along later. Okay.
Bob, you wanted to jump in?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to comment on Wednesday's point about safety. Once she establishes a certain paradigm of riding around on these things, other people look at her and look at her riders and say, I can do that too. And so what we are seeing is a tremendous kind of resurgence of bicycle riding because people understand that it can be safe. And we see the city and the other municipal governments following, creating bike lanes, creating the conditions for more safety, and more people therefore feel comfortable getting on their bike. So there's a ripple effect.
I would love to hear from our listeners who are regular bicyclists. How do you think your, wherever you are, suburban, urban, country, how are your local governments dealing with it? Do you feel safe? Do you ride to work? Do you ride on a daily basis? Would love to hear from you on that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. That's toll-free. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Scott Wagner bicycles just about everywhere.
Yes.
And in all weather. How is Rochester as a bicycling community?
For the most part, I think one of the things that I've seen in the last few years, which is really very heartening, is that we're gradually making the transition, and I say gradually because it is an evolutionary process, to realizing as a community that the bicycle is not a recreational annoyance or a recreational irritation when it's out in traffic, but is in fact a viable means of transportation, a viable part of this whole transportation mix. And I think it's important to emphasize that we're not trying to replace all of the transportation in our community with bicycles. It doesn't make sense. It never really would. But we are saying that this is a viable means of transportation, and it's a viable means of transportation for many people. Many of us who have lived through this past Rochester winter and gone through this past February in Rochester remember how difficult it was to get around by any means. During that entire month, I bicycled from my home in Rochester to my job in Henrietta on a daily basis, and I had the same challenges that everyone did in their cars and so forth, except
some
that
days,
I like to
it
say,
had to be awful some days.
Some days it was awful, but I will tell you that I never have to clear my windshield.
But you may have to pull the ice crystals off your eyebrows. But
that's true.
We're talking to Scott Wagner, who is the coordinator of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. And let me grab some of your phone calls. This is Patricia in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yes, Evan, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick comment about paradigms and changing people's paradigms about bicycles and car share on the road. I'm a bike commuter. I don't commute during the winter. However, I do ride from the east side through the city to get to Gates for during the spring and summer. And I have had numerous occasions where people, where I'm sharing lane with a car and I'll get to a traffic light and someone will roll down the window and say, "You belong on the sidewalk." And I think it's really important that we legislate this idea and include accommodations for bikes and sharing the road with people who are getting their driver's license. It should be part of the exam. It should be part of the driving exam, and it should be inculcated in people's brains early on that bicycles belong in the road. That's where, you know, that's where they should be, and it's just and it's a means of transportation. It's not necessarily a fitness exercise. It, for many people, it's how they get around. So, I'd like some comments from the other folks on the phone, and I'll take the comments offline. Thank
Patricia,
you.
Thanks very much for the phone call. I'll start with Wednesday. What do you think?
Well, yeah, next time, Patricia, when they roll down their window, you should cut them off and say, "Why don't you drive on the sidewalk?"
Would you actually say that, though?
No, I mean, no, I wouldn't.
You're smiling. You're being a little cheeky. But how would you, honest question then, Wednesday, how would you handle it?
Honestly, I ignore people like that.
You ignore that?
I do. We don't actually get that anymore. I used to get that comment a lot in Boston when I was riding my regular bike. It's been a long time since I've gotten it, and I think that partially that's because all of the infrastructure that the city has put in. So that's actually been part of the educational process for drivers. When you see these bicycle arrows on the street or the bike lanes or even signs that say, you know, bicycle share the road with cars, eventually, and it actually, like, I think that the education really mostly comes when cars just start seeing bicycles normally on their commute. You know, when people in cars don't ever see cyclists, then it's something that's you know, seems abnormal to them, and they just think back to their childhood where you would ride your bicycle through the neighborhood on the sidewalk, and you know that's going to take time to change. I typically, you know, ignore people like that because I can't. You're not going to change their mind at that stoplight. And so it's better just to not have a negative interaction and just to leave it alone.
Scott Wagner, how do you handle it when someone barks at you?
Oh, it does happen periodically. And typically I'm not so concerned about the person that's just hollering at me. I'm more concerned about the person who is impatient and really needs to get to that red light 5 seconds earlier. I invariably pull up next to them at the red light because it's still red. And so we end up traveling about the same average speed. But it's that impatience, which is something that's unfortunately way too pervasive in our society. We're so impatient to get from one place to another that the thought of being courteous to another traveler, no matter what their mode of transportation, no matter what their mode of travel, is almost foreign to people at times. And so I really encourage everyone, cyclists, pedestrians, automobile drivers, to not only think about what the rules are and whether you're following the rules and thus doing what's expected of you, but also, are you being courteous to the other traveler, to your fellow traveler on this road? And in so being courteous, are you being courteous in the same way that you would if you casually met a stranger face-to-face? The fact that you're in a vehicle does not isolate you or should not isolate you and put you in a position where you are in some situation of privilege and not being courteous to the traveler next to you.
This is where I think comedian Louis C.K. is right on the money. He said, when we drive cars, we will say things to people, and I say things to people even though they won't hear us, that we would never say if we were in an elevator or walking down the street.
Yeah, people.
It's very interesting.
The humanity gets cut off with that windshield, and I think partially... You know, you're not able to make eye contact. And I think a lot of the ways that people, you know, when you're walking, if someone's in your way, you wouldn't say the things that you would say to them if you were in a car, right? Yeah, so it's the windshield that cuts us off from our humanity.
Let me get another phone call. Tim in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Tim.
I'm laughing on hold thinking of that Louis C.K. bit.
Oh, Tim, I can't be as funny.
For a living,
yes.
I would get beat up about 10 times a day if the people knew what I was saying.
See, that's part of his point. Yes.
It is hilarious. Yeah. But it's nice to hear that safety comes first, because I do drive around all day. Every day I put more than 100 miles on my truck a day. But everyone needs to share the road, because I see too many, well, terrible drivers, first of all, but I see a lot of bicyclists that they're part of traffic and they want to be part of traffic, but red lights are apparently optional, certainly right on reds, right at stop signs, going through stop signs are optional. And I think that, I mean, Wednesday had a great point of teaching safety, and that comes first. And if you want to be considered part of traffic with the rest of us idiots out here, you're going to get grumblings from people who say, well, you're driving with traffic, then stop at the stop sign.
Yeah, that's
actually make a full stop like the rest of us. And I think that's where a lot of the argument comes from, because you see it happening and you're just kind of, you're wondering what's going on in these people's heads, because they're way more exposed than I am in my truck.
Tim, I think Wednesday is going to start off, I think, by your, a lot of nods are on the table. You agree, Wednesday?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, one of the reasons we don't call ourselves couriers, you know, because we wanted to, you know, sort of make that distinction. But not to knock those guys, right? I mean, you do see a lot of people who you might think their behavior is reckless. But part of that is that it's like almost like a fear, you know, like being hunted. You know, you have this adrenaline rush. You're out there. You are completely vulnerable. You have a lot of people in cars who actually express to you in a number of different ways that they don't care about your safety. And, of course, not everyone does this, but it happens so frequently that it puts a person in this sort of heightened state of, like you're being chased through the woods by, you know, by a bear or something. You know, you're in this adrenaline rush. So you do whatever you can, and you have to take your own safety into account. in the defense of, and this is a common argument, right, for motorists who say, well, bicycles don't, you know, cyclists don't follow the rules of the road, so therefore what? You know, I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't have a responsibility to still be safe, right? And you can't use someone's, some behavior that you don't like to justify, like, any, you know, anything, right? But also, you also have to realize that traffic laws were made for cars. You know, we didn't have red lights before cars. Why? Because when you're in a motor vehicle, you're driving around this giant two-ton piece of steel that you actually can really seriously hurt someone. So there's a difference in, so some of the behavior difference, and I think that, you know, some of the rules should be different. Because when you're on a bike, you don't cause such a threat to
we're going to differ here, because you can't say that you want to be part of traffic and then have your own rules. And do you know how many times I see it on my way to work, which is great, I see there's a lot more people biking, but someone, a bicyclist, the light is red, they turn right on it without stopping, and you've got traffic coming from the other way and people locking up or having to go around them because
certainly,
they swing
no, and I understand
into
that.
The road.
Yeah, and you know, what I teach my riders is not that you follow the rules, it's that you understand what the rules are in place for. And we do follow the rules. We stop at red lights and, you know, we, you know, use signals and we, but you know what? The goal is not to follow the rules. The goal is to not impede other people's way, and to not inconvenience or put anyone else in danger. And so this is really what I teach my riders is not blind obedience to the rules, right? It's understanding why those rules are in place, and really they're in place to protect the safety of everyone, and also to protect the smooth flow of traffic. So when we're out there, our goal is to have smooth interactions and have the traffic. It's chaos on the roads, you know. Everyone's in their own bubbles. They're all, like, thinking about where they need to be. They're late for work, you know. It's tough to get around, and everyone has their, you know, issues.
Tim, thanks for the call. And Tim, trust me, look up that Louis C.K. bit, and you will recognize yourself in the bit.
Oh, I've seen it. It's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, that's Tim in Pittsburgh, and it's 100 miles a day on the road, as he said. A lot of people do drive for work, and we all are interacting with bicyclists. I'm going to get back to your phone calls in a bit. I'm way late for a break, which just means people are locked into this conversation. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a number of issues regarding to bicycling, but also bicycling as sort of an economic development tool, as a way to reduce the use of fossil fuels. What if we saw more actual cargo delivery, shipments and whatnot? That's actually what's happening in the Boston area, thanks to Wednesday Jane. Her company is Metro Pedal Power, founded in 2008, and they are delivering up to 500 pounds of cargo. If you watch the film tonight that Bob Nessen put together, you can get a sense for just what it looks like and the way they interact and what they're doing with that. That Wednesday is in Rochester today as part of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. 7 o'clock tonight at the Little Theater. You can see the film, meet Wednesday, talk about it, and you can continue the conversation in about 60 seconds right here on Connections. If you are waiting on hold, we're going to get to your phone call in just a moment. A couple of questions have come in online for Wednesday Jane and the company Metro Pedal Power. Joanne on Twitter wants to know, how do they handle braking power for loads that large, up to 500 pounds? Is that an issue?
Yeah, we actually have our vehicles have big hydraulic disc brakes. They're actually motorcycle brakes on the rear, actually can stop the load, even coming down a hill. And that's, obviously an important part of safety.
And Remy writes in, wants to know, is it more challenging or difficult to make deliveries in the winter? And is there a limited distance you will accept for delivery?
Like Scott said earlier, in the winter, it's harder for everyone. It's harder for walking, biking, trucking. So yes, it is harder in the winter.
But you do it.
We do it, yes. And we love it in a certain way.
And is there a limited distance you will travel for delivery?
We have drawn lines on a map it's not a perfect radius, but we do have limits. It's mostly in the urban, the central urban area of Boston and Cambridge.
A lot of phone calls this hour. Tom in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, I used to ride a bike all over the place, but it got so bad with the people not paying attention to me being on the road with a bike. And that was in the days when you had to jump the curb because there wasn't any cutouts in order to, keep riding, or because the cars are too close for the parked cars, or the trucks are coming down too close for me. So I'm glad that they had the cutouts now for the wheelchairs and the motorized wheelchairs. But I think the bikes ought to be able to use them as well, but also have like a bell or a whistle or something, because nobody wants to get smacked by a car or truck or something. So I just want to know what your counselor has to say about that.
Tom, thanks for the call.
I think one of the important things to realize here is that, yes, for pedestrians, for people with disabilities, a lot of accommodations have been made in recent years to try to adapt. And I would have to say that I would never encourage cyclists to be on the sidewalk as a regular course, because it really is more dangerous coming on and off a sidewalk for you're doing things that automobiles don't expect, whereas if you're in the roadway, your behavior is far more predictable and expected. But I think one of the things that this really brings up is that in Rochester particularly, one of the challenges that we have and one of the things that we have to work on is clearing of that infrastructure, of those sidewalks, of the bicycle infrastructure in the winter. It's a responsibility not only of the municipality, but also of the individuals. For a business, if you have a bus stop out in front of your business, it's not acceptable to just plow the doorway to your business so that people can get in your doorway. It's also your responsibility to plow out that bus stop so that not only can customers come into your facility, also so that they have access, people on the sidewalk have access to the buses. It's all of our responsibility to keep those sidewalks, those ramps, that infrastructure clear so that people can use it in the winter, pedestrians, cyclists, all sorts of modes of transportation.
Bob?
If I could just add, the technology has also changed in favor of bicyclists, because now we have small, very bright LED lamps that we can mount on our helmet, on our bicycle frame, and so forth, that make us much more visible and therefore presumably more safe. There's also a growth in reflective or very bright clothing, like yellow jackets and things like that, that help to make the general automobile and truck driving population much more aware of bicyclists who are in their midst, and that makes for a safer riding environment. The one downside, many bike riders still do not take advantage of those clothing options or the bright light options, and sometimes wear very dark clothes to ride at night, for example, and they're practically invisible to automobile drivers. So one thing that can happen is that bike riders can begin to use these new technologies much more frequently.
Let me get back to the phones. And Judith in Rochester. Go ahead, Judith.
Yes, I'm a resident in the city, and I'm older. I'm 82. And I used to ride a larger bike than was proper for me. I'm barely 5 feet tall now. And I, at one point, bought a bike that actually fit me. To my dismay, I discovered I was definitely at risk. Some years had passed. Cars are bigger, and many drivers are more impatient. I was forced off the road several times, And I was in my 70s when I had that bike. So I gave up on it. I'm now not driving. I did own a car. I'm walking a lot more and riding a bus. It's 1 mile of my house downtown to a regular meeting in the morning. I discover I'm more at risk of being struck and knocked down by bicyclists on the sidewalk, mostly male, cutting along, making as much speed as they can, come up in the, from behind me and zoom by, sometimes 6 inches away from me. I have been knocked over by a bicyclist in the past several years ago. I'm concerned about pedestrian safety here in Rochester. This is not Boston. I do not perceive that there is any kind of safety training as part of buying a bicycle. How about road testing and licenses? And I understand, yes, I understand that there are many people who cannot afford cars. It's their only transportation. They're hustling to get to work, too. Mm. How about the pedestrians who have no choice? And I am very active in this community. And I actually bought reflective vests to wear over my winter clothes.
All right, well, Judith, thanks for the call. Let me go ahead and let the panel weigh in, and Scott Wagner wants to go first. Go ahead, Scott.
So, Judith, you reinforce the point that I made earlier, which is not directed at automobiles or bicycles or pedestrians or any other specific mode of transportation, but addresses the fact that we're all travelers moving from one place that we are coming from to another place that we need to be, and as travelers, we all need to respect, understand, and be courteous to our fellow travelers. Within the center core of the city of Rochester, it's in fact not legal to ride on the sidewalks. That's any place in the city center. Outside of the city center, it is the law doesn't preclude riding on sidewalks. But once again, the courteous thing to do for the sake of pedestrians and the safest thing to do from the standpoint of the cyclist is to ride safely in the street, in the traffic lane, or to the side of the traffic lane if it's safe, so that you are easily seen and so that you're not interfering with pedestrian traffic. That's where I ride, and that's where I found it's really very safe to ride as long as I'm riding predictably and visibly, interacting with traffic in a courteous manner.
I'm going to try to get through a few more listener questions that have come in, and then we're going to circle back to make sure we close with a little bit more information on tonight's film and what Wednesday does as a company. George in Pittsford writes to us, safety concern. When will traffic laws recognize that a bicycle is unstable when starting from a complete stop? I think that it is far safer for bicyclists to treat stop signs as yield. That's George in Pittsford. Panel? Bob, go ahead.
Well, it's a really interesting point. The state of Idaho has a new rule saying that bicyclists do come to a full stop at red lights, but then can proceed after they look in both directions to make sure that it's safe to pass. So that kind of a law might be very useful if it were implemented in places like Rochester or New York State or anywhere in the country.
Yeah, I said this earlier. I think that, we have a lot of traffic. We have all of our traffic laws, which were essentially written for cars and don't take into consideration how bicycles differ from cars. And they differ, obviously, in many, many different ways. So, treating a stop sign as a yield, it's as long as you slow down. You see cyclists sometimes that just blow through a light. And obviously, they're putting themselves and everyone else at risk when they do something like that. But it's really about riding in a courteous and professional way.
Wendy online says, I used to live in Ottawa, Ontario, and biked all year round along the canal to work on bike paths built for miles and miles of travel. I think the biggest issue to usability is infrastructure. We need a real commitment to building a bike system on the roads and on alternate paths. I'm sorry, that comes from Fran in Pittsford. That's Fran in Pittsford. More infrastructure. And again, Scott, go ahead.
One of the things that we're very fortunate to have in Rochester is that we already have a very good north-south connector from along the Genesee Riverway Trail and the Lehigh Valley North Trail, all the way from Rochester Institute of Technology up through the city and up to the north. We also have some good east-west routes, notably the Canal Trail. The issue that we have is with those is winter maintenance. It's similarly with the streets in our communities, winter maintenance of bicycle infrastructure so that it is usable all year round, as it is in Ottawa, as it is in Boston, as it is in Toronto, as it is in Minneapolis and many other places in North America. That winter maintenance is far less of an impact, far less expensive than winter maintenance for automobile travel. And at the same time, by maintaining bicycle infrastructure year-round, we can encourage people to engage more in bicycle transportation year-round and reduce the congestion that clogs our roads in the winter.
Let me get one more comment online from Kevin, who writes to us. And again, Kevin is writing in response to learning about Wednesday Jane's company, and that's called Metro Pedal Power in the Boston area. They are, I would say a bicycle delivery company, but what's the short definition, Wednesday, for someone just joining us?
Yeah, we're a trucking company, but we do everything with bikes.
I love that answer. They specialize in many ways in delivering CSA deliveries directly to people's houses, but they can deliver up to 500 pounds, 8 or 9 employees, some of them part-time, some of them full-time, and bicycles, really tricycles, very interesting contraptions that are very effective at what they do. And Kevin writes to us and says, other cities in the U.S. are supporting viable, sustainable, urban trike business-to-business delivery. Check out Beeline in Portland, Oregon. They deliver to Office Depot, Whole Foods, etc. Their boxes look even larger than those of Metro Pedal. You familiar with that?
Yeah, I know them very well. In fact, they started their company right after we started ours and took inspiration from our company.
8 or 9 employees, so some might say, hey, very interesting, but still an outlier. What would it take to see this really grow, not only in the Boston area, Rochester, across the country?
That's a good question. I mean, we've been in business now for 7 years. It's after about 5 years, it started to feel like a stable business, and there's we're a small business, and that's always challenging. I don't have a business degree or anything like that, so I've been learning everything on the fly. And, at the point we're at right now, we're pretty stable, and we're thinking about whether it might make sense to have a second location in the Boston area, two separate hubs to sort of cover more areas in Boston. Growth, we've had our growth be very organic, we didn't want to grow too fast. Because, we wanted it to be sustainable.
Power to the Pedals is Bob Nessen's film that you can see at the Little Theater tonight at 7 o'clock. For our audience who's been not only engaged with this, but thinking about coming out tonight, how would you describe your film?
The film is an inspired, character-driven portrait of Wednesday and her business. And the big idea is that you can do this too.
I think that's right. I mean, I think sometimes people do hear about what you're doing and maybe they haven't heard of it before, or they think, am I fit enough to do it? I've been to a spinning class. I thought I was going to die. So, it is a cultural change as we've been talking about this hour. In many ways, I think it's just changing about cultural expectations, don't you think, Bob?
It's totally about that. We have provided a model that goes to many different areas, not only physical fitness, but the culture of transportation, the culture of thinking about what is possible in our cities for not just transportation of cargo, but the other bigger idea of general transportation, human transportation, and lowering the carbon footprint. And we want to get that message across with this film.
And Scott Wagner is the coordinator of the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. I know this is about all of those things. We've talked about reducing the carbon footprint, as Bob just said. We've talked about the economy. When you think about Rochester doing something like this, even if it's a small scale, what could the impact be?
We have the opportunity here because we have a number of communities a number of neighborhoods within our community that are reinventing themselves, that are redeveloping themselves. We have an excellent opportunity for small businesses to come together, for people to put together human scale, sustainable, and development inspired businesses that can bring our community together in a much more organic fashion than a top-down development model. It's really an opportunity by using pedal power, by using human-scale transportation, human-scale and neighborhood-scale businesses, we can put together an economic model by which we don't have to be developed from the top down, but where we can all come together and build ourselves up, bring our community together. That's really part of what the film festival is all about. When I started up the idea of the film festival, I wanted to bring the cycling community together, just create an environment where people could come together and enjoy these films, enjoy meeting with cyclists who travel in other parts of the city and who travel on different kinds of bicycles and in different conditions. It's a neighborhood and a community event. I see the same thing as happening in small business development.
If you want to come out, it's 7 o'clock tonight for the film. And I think in so many ways, this conversation has been an interesting one this hour. But you still have to see what Wednesday is doing. And that's why Bob's film is something that is worth checking out tonight, 7 o'clock. And then there will be a discussion afterwards. And we just had a caller ask if we could air the film on WXXI. I don't think we have... I don't know of any current plans to do that, but I will say tonight is a great opportunity. We're glad to be partners with the Little Theater tonight at 7 o'clock. And it's not a short, it's not a long film, but it's a great chance, 30 minutes, yeah. And it's a great chance to not only see the film, meet Wednesday, meet Bob, talk about what's happening in their community and what could be happening in our community. Bob, congrats on the film, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Scott Wagner, I'll see you on a bicycle somewhere around the city.
Thank you, and ride your bike to the film tonight. $1 off admission if you ride your bike there.
Very good. Nice. And Wednesday, Jane, a pleasure to meet you. Fascinating work, and congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And I couldn't even get through every call, so if you did not get through, you know where to go tonight to meet her. Thanks for listening to Member-Supported Public Radio. Val LaBanca and Evan Dawson saying, see you tomorrow on Connections.